The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, episode 281. Welcome to the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, where we talk about applying high leverage psychology in your business and life. I'm your host, Dr. Yishai Barkadari, licensed psychologist, private practice owner, speaker, executive coach, and consultant. I became a psychologist to learn how to leverage psychology and help others do the same. For over a decade, I've been tracking how psychology gets in the way of smart and results-driven people. For years, I've developed frameworks and tools to help them leverage psychology instead to launch themselves forward. It's my mission to share my hard-earned lessons with you so you can launch yourself forward too. I can't wait to talk high leverage psychology with you so you can learn to take higher leverage action today. Season 6 is officially launching next week. While we get everything ready, I wanted to share a few of my favorite episodes. Today, I'm breaking down imposter syndrome and giving you the tools to conquer it. You'll hear examples, research, and strategies to crush your imposter syndrome. There's even a little bonus. You can turn imposter syndrome into motivation instead of holding you back. I'll show you how. Now, without further ado, let's dive into conquering imposter syndrome. When does imposter syndrome show up? It shows up when your next level of success is on the horizon. Your business levels up, you're in a new opportunity, it's bigger and demands more than ever before. It shows up after one level up in the face of a next level up. I think it's critical to point this out because I have an important message for all of you. So listen up. First and foremost, congratulations. I know that probably sounds odd. It might even be a surprise. And let me explain why you have my sincere, honest, and repeated praise. If you're currently feeling or have ever felt imposter syndrome, it's because you've stretched yourself beyond your comfort zone, beyond your zone of mastery, and into the realm of imagination, goals, and dreams beyond who you are now and what you can easily do today. Chances are you've made a habit out of being an overachiever, a learner, a grower, a high performer, someone who wants to level up, to become better, to be more than who you were yesterday, more than who you are today. And tomorrow it's probably going to be the same story over again. You are constantly looking for the next step, and that step is bigger, better, higher than you have ever flown before. This is a critical point and one I'm going to come back to several times, but it's worth acknowledging early and often for reasons that I'm going to explain a little bit later. Now let's dig in and start with the basics. Where does imposter syndrome come from? So I'm going to start with a brief psych lesson. It was actually first described and discussed in the 1970s by two researchers whose names are Suzanne Imes and Pauline Rose Clance. And when they started talking about it and sharing about it, they called it the imposter phenomenon, which personally, I really like that much more than imposter syndrome because it doesn't sound like a disease you've contracted and that you're going to have for the rest of your life. It's an acknowledgement and a recognition that it's a phenomenon. It's something that shows up under certain conditions. And where there are conditions, especially when it comes to being a thinking, adapting organism, there's often purpose. And we're going to get into that more. In fact, according to research by Ansel and their colleagues in 2014, imposter syndrome occurs frequently among high achievers who struggle to internalize and accept their success. In fact, oftentimes, they attribute their success to luck and chance rather than their efforts, their ability, and their learning. It happens to be really common for people when they start something new, which is why at the beginning, I wanted to acknowledge that if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, chances are you've taken a step into something bigger, better, both for who you are and your goals and your business. Here are a few ways that I really understand imposter syndrome as it shows up, how it's showing up, and what it's trying to do. One way of thinking about it is it's kind of looking at yourself from the wrong end of a telescope or binoculars. If you've ever turned binoculars around and looked through them, you'll know that whatever you see looks really small and far away. And if we see ourselves or think about ourselves in that way, especially in reference to our goals or what we're about to embark on, well, that sounds and can feel a lot like imposter syndrome. Another way of thinking about it is it's kind of like when you walk into a hall of mirrors, that every single mirror shows you a different but distorted reflection of yourself. And in the case of imposter syndrome, it's that reflection of self-held views, beliefs, or a story or narrative that in viewing it, I see myself as smaller or less capable. In a way, it's almost like looking at ourselves as two or three levels below or before our next goal or our next dream, the one that we're so focused on and want to accomplish. Another way of thinking about it is it's kind of like looking at yourself as an early draft of a finished book or as a character who's a few chapters behind before they've overcome their next challenge or leveled up in their skill or ability. Another way of thinking about it is if you play video games, it's kind of like wanting to skip all the way from the very beginning when you're just starting to the very powered up endgame character without being in the moment and recognizing each step along the road, without recognizing or realizing that there is ongoing growth and change happening at every moment, every step along the way. According to the American Psychological Association, imposter syndrome is a specific form of intellectual self-doubt. It's looking at ourselves and thinking, am I really capable of doing this? Am I really able to step into or overcome or deal with the challenges that I'm currently facing or the goals that I'm currently trying to accomplish? Some of the really common feelings that come along with imposter syndrome is a fear that others are going to unmask me and see me as the fraud or see me with this self-view that I'm currently seeing myself, whether it's that much smaller version of me in the distorted mirror or the reverse binocular view of myself. Some other feelings that can show up are shame or embarrassment. And sometimes we can assume that a lack of feeling competent means that we must be an imposter. And we're going to circle back and talk about that meaning making as well, because there are a lot of ways that we think that really contribute to that thought process. One of the most common ones, and it's such a common saying, but I think really actually contributes to the imposter phenomenon or imposter mindset, is the phrase, fake it till you make it. Because that thought tells me that I'm really not who I want to be. And it even says that until I make it, there's really no indication that I'm growing, that I'm changing, or that I will be or become. There's no movement towards. It's just that you have to fake, act as if, and then suddenly one day you'll wake up and you will have made it. Or because of some accomplishment or some metric, suddenly you will have or be no longer an imposter. And it can be a really fast way to even ruin your credibility in front of people who really know what they're saying, what they're doing, what they're talking about. Someone who has overcome the challenge that you're currently facing, maybe for the first time. It really reminds me of a book by Carol Dweck called Mindset, where she reviews tons of research that she's done on what she calls two different ways of thinking or perceiving ourselves and others. One is called the fixed mindset, and the other is called a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is really binary. It's almost like a kind of genetic talent where either you have it or you don't. And from that viewpoint, at any given moment, we're evaluating ourselves and expecting that others around us are evaluating us on the basis of whether or not we're fulfilling all the requirements to fulfill that having it. One example she uses is that if we think about ourselves as either being smart or intelligent versus not being smart or intelligent, then every time we open our mouths, we're either confirming that we're genetically smart or intelligent, or if we say something that doesn't fit into that, then we might disprove it. And then suddenly we may view ourselves or others around us may view us as being really unintelligent. It's really a binary way of thinking. And that puts us constantly in a position of having to prove ourselves. The other mindset that Carol Dweck talks about is called a growth mindset. And a growth mindset is really about a continuum where we are constantly changing over time and where effort, time, and energy lead to change and growth. So that if I open my mouth and say something, I might be learning or I might learn after receiving feedback that what I said wasn't necessarily correct or accurate, or perhaps it wasn't the same thing that somebody who perhaps was more informed about a particular topic or subject would have said. And so we're still learning and growing. We're not just determined as being intelligent or unintelligent by what we say, but rather it's about that process. Are we learning from those experiences? Do we just repeat the same thing over and over again? Or are we learning, growing, and becoming better or more informed? That's another reason that at the very beginning, I wanted to start off with an acknowledgement that you are in a constant state of growing, learning, reaching, and accomplishing more and more and more. And of course, the more success you experience, the more you learn and grow, the more your business grows and does better, the more opportunities, the more moments you're going to have where you continue to look forward, not just at the same goal you've been working at, but the next level up. I also wanted to share that there's a lot of range based on research for what percentage of the population experience imposter phenomenon. And it really depends in some ways on the cutoff for how you define it. Research has shown anywhere in a range of 9% to 82% of people experience the imposter phenomenon. And what's really interesting is that research that's done with those in a medical field and in psychology shows that it's actually a lot more common among students versus professionals. And I wanted to take a moment and think and talk about that a bit more, because I think diving into that, it's really important to understand or to consider that perhaps students, before they are credentialed, licensed professionals, and I know that I went through this myself, before I was licensed as a psychologist, there was a lot that I was expected to learn and develop and master. And the viewpoint I was often given is that once I have mastered all of that, once I've taken my licensing exam, once I've done therapy and been supervised and completed my 3,500 hours of training at the end of my program and after my program, at that point, I will now be considered a professional. And what's really interesting is that as a student, my thought process, my mindset was, until I've accomplished all these things, until I've done all these things, I cannot call myself a professional. I cannot call myself a psychologist. I am not yet there. And it lent itself to this viewpoint of, what point will I be there? It was a very binary, either you have it or you don't kind of view, where once you're licensed, you have it, but before you're licensed, you don't. And I will say on the other side of that, what I've come to realize is that there is so much learning to constantly be doing, learning about my field, learning about and developing and continuing to develop my abilities in the therapy room as a psychologist and as a professional. And that might explain, in a way, why students report experiencing the imposter phenomenon so much more frequently than professionals. Another important point here, I think, is to understand and talk about comparison, because there's a lot of comparison that happens. Students frequently compare themselves to each other, and they compare themselves to their professors and to those who are licensed, who are professionals. And in fact, it's part of how our brains frequently work. We're often comparing ourselves with others. And I wanted to talk a little bit about two different kinds of comparison that show up in social science research and psychology research. And that's called upward versus downward comparisons. An upward comparison is comparing myself to someone who's accomplished more than I have. Frequently, these kinds of comparisons that are upward are unidimensional, and they only look at one area that someone else has accomplished more than me. For example, let's say I want to write a book. I might compare myself with someone who has written and sold 15 bestsellers. Well, how am I then likely to feel about myself when I make that kind of unidimensional upwards comparison, right? I might not be considering that the person who has sold 15 bestsellers may have written 200 books over the course of 50-year career. Meanwhile, I might be at the beginning of my career looking at writing my first book, which that person at some point was in that position. But while I'm making that unidimensional upward comparison, it's really easy to look at myself and say, who am I to put this book together? And is anyone even going to buy it? Sometimes we even throw in another factor that we're on even footing or perhaps ahead of someone else. I think a great example of that is, let's say I were to compare myself to the top 30 under 30 list, whether that's in Forbes or Times or Entrepreneur Magazine, it doesn't matter where, or I'm comparing my business to the top 100 fastest growing businesses or largest gross revenue companies. Well, in that case, research shows that when we make these kinds of upward comparisons, we tend to feel less positively about ourselves, and we tend to think about ourselves as being less capable or being less likely to accomplish or to reach that point. In contrast, the other kind of comparison is a downward comparison, where we compare ourselves to someone who's accomplished less than us. Now, a downward comparison often lends itself to feeling and thinking more positively about ourselves. So if somebody compares their financial situation to somebody who is struggling to put a roof over their head or food on their table, they may experience some gratitude. They might even feel more positively about their situation. At the same time, it might also contribute to setting our sights lower or not thinking about and reaching for higher goals and dreams. Chances are, if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, you're not making a ton of downward comparisons. You tend to be making a lot more upward comparisons. And don't get me wrong, comparisons really have a use case. It can be incredibly beneficial in some situations, and yet often our brains are doing it in ways that are totally unhelpful and can even contribute to a backwards binocular view of ourselves. Or, in other words, it can increase a sense of imposter phenomenon. I do think that it's important to dig into when comparisons are useful, because they are useful when you're looking at two people or two groups where you can control for every factor except one decision or one treatment or one difference between them, and then look at a specific outcome or result. It can really help to disentangle and determine the effect of a single choice, a single action, one intervention, or a dose of medication when you compare different people or groups. It's a very common way to set up scientific experiments, especially in medical and in psychology research. And there are a lot of very commonly used statistics to help analyze a singular difference between groups. Now, the reason this kind of comparison is really useful is that we can learn from it what kind of choices, actions, interventions, medications, or responses get better results. But that's a fairly narrow context. And if I'm comparing myself to someone with twice my experience and expertise, or if I compare myself to the highest achiever, like that Forbes list, or if I compare myself to multiple other people, like comparing myself to every Olympic gold medal winner, well, even one of those gold medal winners would feel absolutely terrible about their abilities if they're drawing comparisons to 5 or 10 or 20 or dozens of other people who have each accomplished one thing or achieved excellence in one area. Comparison also really wants you to reach, to accomplish, to do better, to improve and make a greater impact. Notice the use case really is about learning what you can do to get a better result. So in that sense,
The goal of comparison is that it's trying to help me figure out and take away lessons from someone else's success that I can apply to my own life, my own company, my own business, and increase my own success. But we don't learn to do this automatically. And often when we're making comparisons, we're just looking at the outcomes indiscriminately rather than really being discriminating about what we can learn practically, strategically, or tactically, and even to analyze the comparison to determine if it's a useful comparison to actually learn something that's implementable or useful. And as we're talking about comparison, there's a type of comparison that I think is really important to discuss. I think it's one of the more pernicious kinds of comparison. And it's a form of comparison of wherever you are or whatever you're doing that you pit against an imaginary, flawless product, service, business, or outcome, expecting absolute zero number of flaws, mistakes, or issues as the comparison. And that's called perfectionism. Often, perfectionism is also a form of motivation, a drive to work harder, to focus on details, to put in more effort, to accomplish more, to get better and achieve at the highest levels. It can also come out of fear of criticism or from an assumption that any feedback, flaw, or issue is an indicator of unworthiness instead of an opportunity to continue growing, doing better, serving at a higher level, and leveling up. In other words, across all these different examples of perfectionism, of comparing, of the backwards binoculars, and of the hall of mirrors, all of them involve a kind of meaning-making, where as you look at yourself, you see yourself as being incompetent or incapable, rather than viewing yourself as a learning, growing, developing person. Okay, so now let's get to the brass tacks. How do you overcome it? What do you do when imposter syndrome shows up? So I like to call it giving the triple A treatment. Imagine for a moment that you're driving in a car and one of your tires goes flat. In that moment, it's really important to do three things. The first thing you really need is to be aware of and understand exactly what has happened to your tire. So that's the first A, awareness. The second step is analysis. You need to take the time to really understand what are the reasons that the imposter mindset, the thoughts, the feelings, the reactions are showing up at this moment. And it's important. And one thing I often like to do is to ask, what is it trying to do for you? What is its goal for you? What is it trying to point out? Where is that coming from? And the third step is to take the right action. Oftentimes, I like to take a step or a beat in between to make an action plan and then to take the action that you really need to take to move yourself forward. So again, it's awareness, analysis, and action. And I'm going to dig into each of these for you. The first thing to understand with awareness is that imposter syndrome, the imposter phenomenon, the imposter mindset tends to show up in moments, often when we're embarking on a new venture. It's all about stepping up or stepping into something new and often uncomfortable. It can show up when you're making a lot of upward comparisons or when the upward comparison has a huge gap between where you are now and who you'd like to emulate or what you want to achieve. Now, naming it is a part of developing that awareness, and naming it can help. And it can also help to reframe it from imposter syndrome to the imposter phenomenon or the imposter mindset. It's also important as you're generating or really digging into that awareness to recognize that the imposter phenomenon might just be pointing out that you're not yet an expert, that you haven't had extensive experience and mastered a new skill, a new market, or a new product, that you are not yet at that next level in your business that you are imagining, thinking, planning, setting goals, creating, and dreaming up. And a lot of this in the awareness is about recognizing how you process and respond to those thoughts. So here's what you can do. Slow down and recognize. Take the time to notice the thoughts and feelings. And one thing I pointed out before is it's really easy to make meaning out of the thoughts and feelings. So try to hold off on passing judgment. Just notice if you're making comparisons, if you have a perfectionistic idea, if your goals and dreams are leading you to see yourselves through the backwards binoculars. And try to suspend for a moment those judgments or that meaning that says, because I'm not yet competent, because I'm not yet there, it might or it must mean that I'm incompetent or incapable, that I'm an imposter. The second step in analysis is it's really important to recognize that thoughts and feelings of incompetence do not mean that you're a fraud or a failure. And it's important to do a reality check. Are you there yet? Do you have to be there? Maybe you are just at the beginning or somewhere in the middle of a learning process. I want to share with you guys the background of my phone is an open book with the words, learn your way into it. And for me, it's important as part of that analysis to take a beat to recognize my imposter syndrome is not there to just hammer at me and tell me that I'm an awful, incapable human being or that my business is going to collapse. Its job is to point out that I'm not yet an expert because I am having goals and dreams and ideas and plans for a company, for a business, and for myself to be more or greater than I am today. In this analysis, it's really important to ask yourself, what is the thought wanting for me? What is it trying to do for me? I really want to point out here, a lot of people think about imposter syndrome as though it's trying to do something to me. My imposter syndrome is trying to tell me that I will never get there, rather than understanding that my imposter syndrome is trying to do something for me. It's trying to make sure that I don't just fake it in a way that might even prevent me from making it. And I ask these kinds of questions and I explore this with my patients or my clients when I'm in therapy or when I'm in coaching. And obviously it's different in different contexts. It's really important to imagine the thoughts and feelings as having a purpose. They have a goal for you. And ask yourself, what is it? I often hear, oh, these thoughts, these feelings are just trying to bring me down. Really though? Are they telling you that they don't want you to be good at what you do? Or are they pointing out that you're not there yet, that you're not yet capable, you're not yet experienced, that you're a rookie and not a veteran? Not yet. You can recognize what it's saying and choose to handle it differently. Your imposter thoughts or mindset want you to become more competent. And with that in mind, you can harness the power of those thoughts, of that thought process by asking in return, well, how can I get more experience and gain expertise? I want to come back to what I was saying at the very beginning. Your imposter thoughts show up because you're a high achiever. You want to step up. You want to become a master. You want to achieve your dreams. You want and are driven to level up. Your imposter thoughts are pointing out how important that is to you. And it's jabbing at you by saying, hey, buddy, you're not there yet. Don't assume or think or act like you are. There are steps to do, things to learn, growth to be had before you are there, before you can get there. And one of the most helpful things to respond is to say, okay, brain, let's get on that. Help me get there. So here are some practices that you can do. One is to recognize that those of us who experience imposter syndrome frequently tend to ignore or skip out on opportunities to see, to acknowledge, and to update our brains on our growth. I like to say we miss or dismiss them, and then we move on really quickly. Like the inverted telescope or the inverted binoculars. What's the view I have of myself? So one daily action you can take is slow down, take the time, and ask yourself one thing that you've accomplished, you've learned, or one thing you've improved in yourself, what you did better today than yesterday. And there's so many moments that you can take that opportunity. I like to do this in the shower. You can make it part of your morning routine or your bedtime routine, or you can put it in your journaling. There's so many different opportunities you have, but just taking one opportunity a day to ask yourself this question can help you really reset that hall of mirrors so that it accurately reflects your growth. And so that you, when you think forward, can see yourself as able or capable of growing into the new shell, the new company, the new person that you are working so hard to achieve, to grow into, to learn your way into. Another thing you can do is be intentional and focus on only one or two areas rather than 5 or 10 things all at once. Slowing down and working on one thing will allow you to put more time, energy, and focus and to develop it. And as you develop and master one of those, you can then move on to another one and then another one. One last thing you can do is to respond to your brain when these thoughts show up and say, okay, I'm not there yet. Thank you for pointing out that I'm not there yet. Now, what can I do? How can I plan moving forward? And that leads us to step number 3 of the AAA treatment. You got to make an action plan and start taking action. Formulating that plan to really target and be clear and get your growth moving forward, to get your company or your business moving forward, is another part of that. Now, chances are you're already really good at that. It's just that the next step you're taking might be unfamiliar, might take a new kind of action plan, might require a different way of approaching or a new set of skills or a longer process of learning and trying and making mistakes or things not going as expected. And all of that is part of learning, which is why it can be so helpful to ask yourself every day, what's one thing I learned today? What's one thing I've improved for today? Or even ask yourself, what's one thing after experiencing today I can improve for tomorrow? And that can be your formulating that new action, that new plan. So in brief, today I talked all about imposter syndrome from its psychological roots and research into talking about different ways of viewing and understanding imposter syndrome, why it shows up, how it shows up by way of comparison and perfectionism, how you can start to interpret and reinterpret it, and some really important acknowledgments that you are learning, growing, setting higher goals, that because you're a high performer and a high achiever, that's why you want and need to continue setting the next goal to reach for the next level. Your imposter syndrome isn't there to knock you down. It's there to point out and help support you in a process of learning and growing your way into it. So take that step today. Take a moment to slow down and pay attention. Get aware. Be intentional about that. Do some analysis. Create an action plan and start taking action. And if you need any help in that, reach out. Ask a question. You can reach out to me or you can reach out to another friend or someone else that you trust who can help guide you in that process. At the very least, you know where to find me. And on that note, I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. If you learned something valuable today, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. It helps grow the show and gives more smart, high-performing, results-driven people like you the ability to learn and apply high-leverage psychology to your business and life. The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai podcast is produced by Dr. Yishai and PodTech. Music by www.purple-planet.com. Dr. Yishai is a psychologist, but not your psychologist. The conversations and content of this podcast do not contain or create any psychology practice, diagnosis, or therapist-patient relationship with the guest or listener. The information contained in this publication is for general informational purposes only and shall not be relied on or construed as coaching advice or therapy. So do your own research before using anything from this podcast. Thanks again for listening. I hope today's episode fulfilled my mission to help you leverage psychology better in your business and life.